part of sin is, you know, every month we pick a verse from the Psalms, started doing this a couple of months ago, that we just want you to pray into your life, the life of your family, the life of our church. This month is a great psalm, Psalm 46:1. God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. I just want to really encourage you to pray that. That's a great verse to pray in our lives. All of us have trouble. All of us have times when we really need that verse. So I want to encourage you to pray that verse in your life, and let's see what God is going to do. Speaking of prayer, you may have heard the story of the two Chicago Bear football players who were preparing for the big game. And one player said to the other player, "Hey, before we go out there and the game starts, we should pray." The other player looked at him and said, "Pray? You don't know how to pray." "I do so." "No, you don't." "Yes, I do." "Well, look, if you know how to pray, I want you to recite the Lord's Prayer. In fact, if you can recite the Lord's Prayer, I'll give you $50. "Watch me. I can do that." And this is what he prayed. "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." And the other guy said, "Amazing. I didn't think you knew the Lord's Prayer." We're in a series entitled Unstoppable. We've been looking at the first 12 chapters of the book of Acts and seeing what we can learn from the first century for the 21st century. And one of the things, if you've been with us through this journey, I'm sure you've noticed, is that the first century church was a church of prayer. In Acts 1:14, it says they were constantly in prayer. In verse 24 of chapter 1, they chose a new apostle in prayer. The church was launched while people were praying. After the Spirit came, it says in Acts 2:42, they devoted themselves to prayer. In chapter 4, as they were facing persecution, in verse 24 it says, they raised their voices together in prayer to God. The church was born in a spirit of prayer, it was built on a foundation of prayer, and it moved ahead in prayer. And as we come to Acts 12, we see once again the church in prayer. Acts chapter 12, verse 1 says this, "By that time, King Herod Agrippa began to persecute some believers in the church. He had the apostle James, John's brother, killed with a sword." The King Herod referred to here is not Herod the Great, the one who killed all the innocent children in Bethlehem. This is his grandson, Herod Agrippa. And Herod was what was called a client king, which meant he was not true royalty. He reported to Caesar, the emperor, and his job, like the other Herods before him, was to keep Israel under control. And actually, this Herod, of all the Herods, was the most popular with the Jewish people. And one of the reasons was he made it a priority to maintain their favor. Because he knew if the Jewish people were under control, the Roman government would be happy. And if the Roman government was happy, he got to keep his job. And one of the ways he found to keep the Jewish people under control and happy was to persecute the church. And so he had the apostle James killed with a sword. Now there are three men in the New Testament named James. James, the brother of John, James, the brother of Alphaeus, and James, who is listed in Matthew and Mark as the brother of Jesus. The James who was beheaded by Herod was James, the brother of John. He was one of the original 12 apostles. And when Herod saw how much James' execution pleased the Jewish people, he arrested Peter, and Peter was really the leader of the church in Jerusalem. Herod was not dumb. He knew if one executed church leader was a crowd pleaser, why not two? And so Herod arrested Peter during the Passover celebration when Jerusalem would be absolutely packed with people. Herod knew this was a great moment to grandstand. He could arrest Peter and everybody would know that he was arresting Peter and he would look good. It was a great political move. However, Herod could not execute Peter during the feast because during Passover, all the trials were suspended. So Herod would have to wait to after Passover was done before he could publicly execute Peter. And so in the meantime, look at verse 4, then he imprisoned him, placing him under the guard of four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring Peter out for public trial after the Passover. Herod put Peter in prison under heavy guard. I'm sure he had heard how the apostles had escaped prison before, and he was taking no chances here. And so Peter was under the guard of four squads of four soldiers. Two soldiers were literally chained to him in his cell. Others were guarding the gate to his cell or the gate to the prison. The iron gate on the outer wall of the prison was secured. We're talking here about maximum security. So here you have a church leader. The leader of the church is in jail awaiting execution. He's chained to two guards. Guards are outside his door. The gate to the prison has been secured. The situation literally looks hopeless. Have you ever experienced that? Not chained to guards in a jail. That'd be an interesting story. Share with me if you have. But have you ever experienced a situation that seems hopeless? A relational situation seems hopeless. You're estranged from somebody and reconciliation seems hopeless. A marriage situation that seems hopeless. A health situation that seems hopeless. A financial situation that seems hopeless. A career or a job situation that seems hopeless. Have you ever experienced that sense of hopelessness? Imagine you were in the early church. Imagine the impact this would have on the church. You just have seen James executed. Peter is in jail with no hope of getting out, waiting to be executed. If you're the early church, if you're this new church, what do you do? How do you respond? Well, we see once again when the early church faced difficult times, they responded by gathering together to pray. Notice verse 5. But while Peter was in prison, the church prayed very earnestly for him. The church prayed, not casual, half-hearted prayers. Oh God, please bless Peter. Make him comfortable while he's in jail. No, they prayed earnestly. And in the Greek, that word means without ceasing, fervently. They prayed with such heart and with such passion that they did not stop praying. They realized they were in a battle and prayer was one of their weapons. And folks, we are still in a battle today. Paul says we don't battle against flesh and blood, but against unseen powers and principalities. If you're a Christ follower, you're in the kingdom of heaven, and the kingdom of heaven is doing battle with the kingdom of darkness, and it is a battle, it is a war, and one of our key weapons today is still prayer. And that's why we need to pray earnestly and expectantly and passionately. We need to believe on God's promises in prayer. Meanwhile, look at verse 6. This blows me away. The night before Peter was to be placed on trial, look at this. He was asleep, fastened with two chains between two soldiers. Others stood guard at the prison gate. Peter's sleeping. It amazes me he's able to sleep. He's chained to two guards in a prison cell. Imagine how hard that would be to sleep under any circumstances. But he also knows what's coming. The next day, he's going to be publicly executed. And yet he's sleeping. How could he sleep at a time like this? He could sleep because he had a deep confidence and trust in the risen Jesus. You see, he'd already experienced a prison break. And so underneath it all, he probably thought, if God wants to break me out of prison, he can. But he also remembered the words that Jesus had prophesied to him. And Jesus had told Peter, one day you're going to die a violent death. And so maybe he also thought, well, the words Jesus spoke are coming true. Either way, he's at peace. And he's sleeping. See, understand this. When Jesus is your center, you can experience a peace that surpasses all understanding no matter what your circumstances are. Remember last week I talked about turning your world upside down. Jesus wants to turn your world upside down and shake you out of the core and put himself at the core of your life. When Jesus is at the center of your life, you can have a peace that surpasses all understanding no matter what your circumstances, no matter how hopeless things. Roll the tape back. No matter how hopeless things seem, you can have a peace. Okay, now watch what happens here. So Peter's asleep, and I love this. An angel appears. Verse 7, suddenly there was a bright light in the cell, and an angel of the Lord stood before Peter. I don't know about you, but if in my bedroom suddenly there was a bright light and an angel was there, I would wake up. Not Peter. He has such peace. He's sleeping. Look what happens. The angel struck him on the side to awaken him. Peter was sleeping so peacefully, the angel had to punch him in the ribs to wake him up. That's the kind of peace he had. And it says, quick, get up. And the chains fell off his wrists. Then the angel told him, get dressed and put on your sandals. And he did. Now put on your coat and follow me, the angel ordered. So Peter left the cell following the angel, but all the time he thought it was a vision. He didn't realize what was actually happening. So they passed the first and second guard posts and came to the iron gate leading to the city. And this opened for them all by itself. So they passed through and started walking down the street. And then the angel suddenly left them. An angel appeared and said to Peter, get dressed, put on your sandals, grab your coat, follow me, let's go. And he's dazed, he's bewildered. It's like he's sleepwalking. And he stepped over the guards he was chained to, walked past the guards that were guarding his cell. The iron gate opened all by itself. Peter walked down the street and the angel disappeared, which left Peter on the side of the road all by himself in the middle of the night. Look at verse 11. Peter finally came to his senses. It's really true, he said. The Lord has sent his angel and saved me from Herod and from what the Jewish leaders had planned to do to me. He's rubbing his eyes. He's slapping himself. And he finally realized, this is true. It's really happened. I've gone from being a prisoner to a fugitive. And so he headed over to Mary, Mark's mother's house, where the Christ followers had gathered to pray. And look at, I love this, verse 13. He knocked at the door in the gate, and a servant girl named Rhoda came up to open it. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed that instead of opening the door, she ran back inside and told everyone, Peter is standing at the door. You're out of your mind, they said. When she insisted, they decided it must be his angel. They're praying, God, set Peter free, deliver him. And then Rhoda comes and announces Peter's at the door, and they're like, shut up, no way. They didn't believe her. Now remember, this is happening during Passover. Passover celebrated a time in Israel's history when God freed his people from the Egyptians. These Jewish Christ followers knew the Passover story. They also knew the other Old Testament stories of miraculous deliverance. And yet they're surprised when God delivered Peter in the present. It seems like they weren't really expecting God to answer their prayers in a miraculous way. How many of us think like that? Think for a moment. I think sometimes we believe God did great things in the past. And we know we're praying to a God who used to act, who used to do miraculous things. But we struggle to believe that God will still do great things, miraculous things in the present. We sometimes think that's all about the past. And we don't expect God to do miraculous stuff in the present. A small Oklahoma town had two churches and one distillery. And the churches complained that the distillery was giving the town a bad image. Added to that was the fact that the owner of the distillery was an avowed atheist. And so the church folks decided to hold a joint Saturday night prayer meeting. And they gathered together on that Saturday night and they prayed. They prayed asking God to do something about the distillery. After the prayer meeting was over, a massive thunderstorm came through the town. Lightning struck the distillery and burned it to the ground. The insurance adjusters notified the distillery owner that they were not going to pay any of the claim because the fire was an act of God. The distillery owner sued the churches, claiming that they conspired with God to put them out of business. The churches denied they had anything to do with the fire. The presiding judge opened the trial with these words. I find one thing in this case most perplexing. We have a situation here where the plaintiff, an avowed atheist, is professing his belief in the power of prayer. And the defendants, all faithful church members, are denying that very same power. Listen, with God, all things are possible. Not just in the past, but in the present. With God, all things are possible. Jesus said in Matthew 19, with man this is impossible, but listen to what Jesus said. With God, all things are possible. With God, all things are possible. The impossible becomes possible with God. The impossible becomes possible with God. Do we believe that? Do you pray like you believe that? Do you pray like you really believe that the impossible is possible with God? Nothing is impossible with God. Jesus said, with God, all things are possible. We need to pray like that. We need to pray expectantly and passionately like that. Meanwhile, look at verse 16. I love this. Peter's, meanwhile, knocking at the door. Anybody gonna let me in here? Right? Harder for him to get in the house than it was to get out of jail. When they finally opened the door, they saw him and they were amazed. They open the door and they're shocked. And once they get off over their shock, they celebrate. And then Peter settles them down and tells them what had happened. And Peter got out of Dodge because he knew that Herod would be looking for him. And so he left. And before I continue on with the story, let's just stop here for a moment and acknowledge something really important that we often forget. I think it's easy for us to forget just how much prayer matters. Prayer matters. I'm going to read you some verses from Revelation 8. They're filled with wonderful imagery, but the point is so, so true. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. As I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Another angel who had a golden censer came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints. On the golden altar before the throne, the smoke of the incense, look at this, together with the prayers of the saints, went up before God from the angel's hand. All heaven came to a standstill. Why? So the prayers of the saints could rise before God. That the book of Revelation was written to Christ followers who were experiencing severe persecution. They had neither weapons or votes. They had little money and no prestige. But what they did have was prayer. And the prayers of those Christ followers had a powerful impact. Look at verse 5. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and hurled it on the earth. And there came peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. That happened because God's people prayed. When God's people pray, great things happen. Prayer unleashes the power of God. Our prayers are far more powerful than we realize. Our world is shaken daily by the prayers of Christ followers. Your prayers impact your life and the lives of others in ways we don't even understand. And I think when we get to heaven one day, we're going to see the impact our prayers had, and all of us are going to wish we had prayed a lot more, because prayer matters. And maybe you're sitting here today and you're facing circumstances beyond your control. Maybe your situation seems hopeless. Let me say to you, never underestimate the power of prayer. Prayer still has the ability to unleash the mighty, miracle-working power of God. What God did in the past, God can do in the present. Our God is the God that takes the impossible and makes it possible. Prayer matters. And that's why here at Saanich, we're seeking to create a culture of expectant, passionate prayer. This fall, we're starting something in October called First Tuesdays, where we're going to gather together Tuesday nights. First Tuesday of every month, we're gathering together to pray and to worship. We're gathering more as a staff to pray together. We've asked our ministry directors to, in each of their ministry areas, create a culture of expectant, passionate prayer. Because prayer matters. Now back to our story, verse 18. At dawn, there was a great commotion among the soldiers about what had happened to Peter. Herod Agrippa ordered a thorough search for him. When he couldn't be found, Herod interrogated the guards and sentenced them to death. Afterward, Herod left Judea to stay in Caesarea for a while. Now that seems harsh, because he escaped with an angel. All the guards get wiped out. But Roman law was this. Roman law punished a guard with the same punishment the escaped prisoner would have received. And so because Peter was going to be executed, the guards were executed. Now let me read you the rest of the story, starting in verse 20. Now Herod was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon. So they sent a delegation to make peace with him, because their cities were dependent upon Herod's country for food. The delegates won the support of Blastus, Herod's personal assistant, and an appointment with Herod was granted. When the day arrived, Herod put on his royal robes, sat on his throne, and made a speech to them. The people gave him a great ovation, shouting, "It's the voice of a god, not of a man." Instantly, an angel of the Lord struck Herod with a sickness, because he accepted the people's worship instead of giving God glory to God. So he was consumed with worms and died. There are better ways to die than that. Ugh. Now the historian Josephus, who is regarded still to this day as a very, very reliable historian of the times, and who wrote from a Jewish, not a Christian perspective, recounted this same event. And Josephus tells us that the royal robe that Agrippa wore was made wholly of silver. It was woven with silver threads. And when the morning sun hit the silver filaments in the robe and made them sparkle, the people then, at that point, hailed Agrippa as a god. And the king did not rebuke or correct them. He didn't reject their flattery. He soaked it all in, and Josephus says at that moment, he suffered violent stomach pains. And the pain increased so severely that he had to be carried into the palace, where 5 days later he died at the age of 54. Josephus said that Herod was struck with violent stomach cramps. Luke gives us a reason. An angel of the Lord struck Herod, and he was eaten by worms. Now I want you to notice the last verse of chapter 12, verse 24. The word of God continued to spread, and there were many new believers. The great theologian John Stott once said this: chapter 12 opens with James dead, Peter in prison, and Herod triumphing. It closes with Herod dead, Peter free, and the word of God triumphing. Human tyrants may oppress the church. They may even temporarily hinder the spread of the gospel, but they will never be able to stop it. The good news of Jesus will continue to spread. People will continue to turn to him. Nothing or no one will ever be able to stop that. In fact, in times of persecution, the church gets stronger and more effective, not less. Nothing can stop the good news of Jesus because Jesus has won the ultimate victory. Let me close today with a story that I've shared a couple of times before. A janitor allowed some seminary students to use the local school gym to play basketball after hours. And while the seminary students were playing basketball, the janitor borrowed one of their Bibles and would read it. One of the students once asked the janitor, "What are you reading?" He said, "I'm reading the book of Revelation." The seminary student chuckled, "Yeah, right. No, really," the janitor said, "I'm reading the book of Revelation. Do you understand what you've been reading?" "Oh, yes," replied the janitor. Chuckling again, the seminary student asked, "Well then, tell me what it means." The janitor looked at him and said, "It means that Jesus is going to win." That was the great hope of the early church. Through their good days and their bad days, the great hope of the early church was that the risen Jesus was going to win. And that's the great hope of the church today. That Jesus is going to win. That our victory has been assured. That Jesus has overcome death and sin and evil. And one day his victory day will come and there will be a new heaven and a new earth. As Christ followers, we are people of hope. And I want to say to you today, no matter what you are going through, no matter what you are facing today, two things. Number one, stay hopeful. Stay hopeful. Keep your hope on Jesus. Keep focused on the risen Jesus and allow his hope to be your hope today. Second thing I'd say is stay prayerful. Your prayers matter. Believe in the promises of God in prayer. Our God is the God who can make the impossible possible. And so we need to lift our voices to him in prayer because prayer matters. No matter what you're going through today, stay hopeful and stay prayerful.